monographic studies, and my neglect of certain subjects, such as botany, all this continues and connects with some branch of this widely ramified conversation. The dream again takes on the character of a justification, of a pleading for my rights, like the first analyzed dream of Irma's injection. It even continues the theme which that dream started, and discusses it with the new subject matter which has accrued in the interval between the two dreams. Even the apparently indifferent manner of expression of the dream receives new importance. The meaning is now, I am indeed the man who has written that valuable and successful treatise on cocaine. Just as at that time I asserted for my justification, I am a thorough and industrious student. In both cases, then, I can afford to do that. But I may dispense with the further interpretation of the dream, because my only purpose in reporting it was to examine the relation of the dream content to the experience of the previous day which arouses it. As long as I know only the manifest content of this dream, but one relation to a day impression becomes obvious. After I have made the interpretation, a second source of the dream becomes evident in another experience of the same day. The first of these impressions to which the dream refers is an indifferent one, a subordinate circumstance. I see a book in a shop window, whose title holds me for a moment, and whose contents could hardly interest me. The second experience has great psychic value. I have talked earnestly with my friend, the eye specialist, for about an hour. I have made allusions in this conversation which must have touched both of us closely, and which awakened memories revealing the most diverse feelings of my inner self. Furthermore, this conversation was broken off unfinished because some friends joined us. What now is the relation of these two impressions of the day to each other, and to the dream which followed during the next night? I find in the manifest content merely an allusion to the indifferent impression, and may thus reaffirm that the dream preferably takes up into its content non-essential experiences. In the dream interpretation, on the contrary, everything converges upon an important event which is justified in demanding attention. If I judge the dream in the only correct way, according to the latent content which is brought to light in the analysis, I have unawares come upon a new and important fact. I see the notion that the dream deals only with the worthless fragments of daily experience shattered. I am compelled also to contradict the assertion that our waking psychic life is not continued in the dream, and that the dream instead wastes psychic activity upon a trifling subject matter. The opposite is true. What has occupied our minds during the day also dominates our dream thoughts, and we take pains to dream only of such matters as have given us food for thought during the day. Perhaps the most obvious explanation for the fact that I dream about some indifferent impression of the day, while the impression which is justifiably stirring furnishes the occasion for dreaming, is that this again is a phenomenon of the dream disfigurement, which we have above traced to a psychic power acting as a censor. The recollection of the monograph on the genus Cyclamen is employed as though it were an allusion to the conversation with my friend, very much as mention of the friend in the dream of the deferred supper is represented by the allusion smoked salmon. The only question is, by what intermediate steps does the impression of the monograph come to assume the relation of an allusion to the conversation with the eye specialist, since such a relation is not immediately evident? In the example of the deferred supper, the relation is set forth at the outset. Smoked salmon, as the favourite dish of the friend, belongs at once to the series of associations which the person of the friend would call up in the lady who is dreaming. In our new example, we have two separated impressions which seem at first glance to have nothing in common except that they occur on the same day. The monograph catches my attention in the forenoon. I take part in a conversation in the evening. The answer supplied by the analysis is as follows. Such relations between the two impressions do not at first exist, but are established subsequently between the presentation content of the one impression and the presentation content of the other. I have recently emphasized the components in this relation in the course of recording the analysis. With the notion of the monograph on cyclamen, I should probably associate the idea that cyclamen is my wife's favorite flower only under some outside influence, and this is perhaps the further recollection of the bunch of flowers missed by Mrs. L. I do not believe that these underlying thoughts would have been sufficient to call forth a dream. There needs no ghost, my lord, come from the grave to tell us this, as we read in Hamlet. But behold, I am reminded in the analysis that the name of the man who interrupted our conversation was Gärtner. Gardner, and that I found his wife in blooming health. I even remember now that one of my female patients, who bears the pretty name of Flora, was for a time the main subject of our conversation. It must have happened that I completed the connection between the two events of the day, the indifferent and the exciting one, by means of these links from the series of associations belonging to the idea of botany. Other relations are then established, that of cocaine, which can, with perfect correctness, form a go-between connecting the person of Dr. Koenigstein with the botanical monograph which I have written, and strengthen the fusion of the two series of associations into one, so that now a portion of the first experience may be used as an allusion to the second. I am prepared to find this explanation attacked as arbitrary or artificial. What would have happened if Professor Guttner and his blooming wife had not come up, and if the patient who was talked about had been called not Flora, but Anna? The answer is easy, however. If these thought relations had not been present, others would probably have been selected. It is so easy to establish relations of this sort, as the joking questions and conundrums with which we amuse ourselves daily suffice to show. The range of wit is unlimited. To go a step further, if it had been impossible to establish interrelations of sufficient abundance between the two impressions of the day, the dream would simply have resulted differently. Another of the indifferent impressions of the day, such as come to us in multitudes and are forgotten, would have taken the place of the monograph in the dream, would have secured a connection with the content of the talk, and would have represented it in the dream. Since it was the impression of the monograph, and no other that had this fate, this impression was probably the most suitable for the establishment of the connection. One need not be astonished, like Lessing's Hanschenschlau, because it is the rich people of the world who possess the most money. Still, the psychological process by which, according to our conception, the indifferent experience is substituted for the psychologically important one seems odd to us and open to question. In a later chapter, we shall undertake the task of making this seemingly incorrect operation more intelligible. We are here concerned only with consequences of this procedure, whose assumption we have been forced to make by the regularly recurring experiences of dream analysis. But the process seems to be that, in the